Welcome back, guys. Today, oh my gosh, I'm so excited because I am here with one of my best friends in the world, Maria Conrad. She's director of Nashville Ballet 2. She's my dance sensei. She's here. She's here with us today. Hey there, and welcome to the Cinnamon Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Kimberly Hand, and I'm thrilled to have you with me on this vibrant journey of discovery and growth. This podcast is your go-to space for embracing intention, where you'll find clarity on your unique path, deepen those meaningful connections, and unleash your creativity like never before. We'll explore how to build unshakable confidence and celebrate the beauty of gratitude, all while savoring the calm that consistency brings to our lives. Thank you for being with me. Let's sprinkle a little cinnamon into your day and make life sweeter, healthier, and more fulfilling. Welcome, Maria.
Kim, I'm so excited to be here. And you are like one of my favorite students of all time. All time.
So when I started this podcast, actually, it's funny, you were one of the top people that I wanted to have on. And every time you come into town, I say, you want to do a podcast? When are you coming down? I would love to do a podcast. And here you are, finally. I scooped you up.
I'm so excited. And I love being home and being with you, a sense of home, and seeing like, this is amazing, like
it's
what
amazing.
You've built. It's so good.
So Maria and I went to the same art school. We kind of knew each other there, but then really connected after the fact when I was in my 20s and I decide that I'm going to re-enter dance. I've done the art school thing. Went through high school, went to college, was working in the professional world and like totally unfulfilled. And I found an adult dance class that Maria Conrad was teaching at
Friday,
the time.
Friday mornings at 9 a.m.
Friday at 9, yes. I would skip work and I would tell them that I was doing a sales call. I was in sales and I would tell them that I was going on a sales call and I would really go to dance class with Maria Conrad and then put on my dress. I would take off my sweaty dance clothes, put on my dress, still sweaty, and like head off to work.
To the next class.
To the next class.
But you know what I was thinking about, Kim? That class was an amazing group of women.
It was. It
like,
really was.
Like, really inspiring that reinvented himself. Like, Vicky owns businesses and bars, and Tony went from, like, real estate into the best librarian ever.
Yes,
like,
librarian,
like,
yes.
Right? Like, those women completely reinvented themselves, but also talked about how that class was their therapy.
Yeah.
Right? Like it was cheaper than therapy.
Yeah.
Coming
it was
to
high
dance
vibe
class.
Coming to you. You were a ray of light. You were actually somebody, you are somebody that here I had danced my whole life and I had never had a dance teacher like you. And I mean that you were so encouraging. You were so loving. Like, you wrapped us all in love and like told us that we could do anything that we wanted to do in the dance room. And I know, I feel like I'm going to cry talking about this because you really did give me the confidence and the skills. I mean, you really did. You taught me what I needed to know to go out there and audition for the Miami Dolphins cheerleaders. And I did that only after taking your class and feeling like, oh my God, I can do this. She thinks I can do this and I can do this. And here you're a year younger than me, but like you're my dance mentor.
But I remember that moment too. I remember being like, Kim, if we're doing this, we're doing this.
Yes.
And like we would work in the like tiniest times, you would run around. Like your determination was something that was so inspiring, like to just go for. And like, I remember you came to me and you were like, last year I danced to Miley Cyrus for the final round. And I was like, we're not doing that this year.
The climb.
It was the climb.
I still love that song.
I know you do. And I was like, I'm aware that you love it, but this may not be the right venue for that dance number.
I did like a lyrical self-choreographed dance, which was
amazing.
Mine. But then you took it to the, and we did Amy Winehouse.
We put a chair in it.
A chair. There were fishnets, a corset, like, and they even said, I think some of the notes that were on my audition form were brought the sex appeal. And that was you.
Yes, but I think that what was so interesting about you, and I think that women need to remember that, like, not everybody needs to be sexy in the same way. Like, you have a joy and a love that people, like, identify with, and that's what I was like, we're going with that. You know what I mean? Like, even though there's the corset and there's the everything, there's, like, your charm and sparkle in your eye, and that's, like, what we went with. And I was so proud of you when you got on the team. It was so exciting.
I think you were, like, my first call. I was like, I made it! Like, so excited.
And then I remember years later, I was home, and in my dad's room, there was a signed photo of you, and I was like, how do you know Kim? And he was like, these are my friends from the Honda Classic. Because you had done, like, an appearance at the Honda Classic, and my dad had a signed photo of Kim in his room, which I loved.
Oh, we love that. Gene Conrad. Oh, my God. We love him so much.
Yes, so much. Yes.
But that was so funny. Because, you're like, wait, this is my friend, and, what is this picture? And I do remember him at the Honda Classic. We had to do all these appearances for, like, background knowledge. We had to do these appearances where we would go. And golf tournaments, big golf tournaments were a big thing. Yeah. And so, I met your dad.
I loved it. And even during the season, watching you balance your job and rehearsals and full hair and makeup at every rehearsal and getting to Miami, like, it was so inspiring.
Oh, my
gosh. So inspiring. Well, showing, like, if you want something, you can make it happen.
At any age. And it was all because of you, though. It really was. I would not have done it had it not been for you encouraging me. And so I feel like I wanted to get you here to give you a big public thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
For what you did. And then years went on, and actually I ended up dancing with your company, Reach Dance Company, that you started from nothing, and you created these incredible performances around Palm Beach County. And we were talking about this because we just had coffee and tea before we got here. And just like, I was thinking about this, like, what is the theme for today? And like, what are we going to talk about? Creativity. And you are the most creative person I think I've ever met. I know this because you have created these incredible productions. And that's not like, I don't know, it's like writing a movie, you know? You Right. created these productions, and they have been something, just from the costumes to the lighting to the music to everything that goes into it. So spectacular. So I want to know more about your creative process, and how do you keep that, being the director of Nashville Ballet 2 and creating a beautiful performance that you just created for them. You say it.
Dia de los Muertos.
Based on, that's the Day of the Dead,
yes.
Right? So you created this from nothing, this performance. So talk a little bit about that in context with the show, or however you want to address it.
So I think a lot of times creative people, we don't have a choice. Like, I feel like I'm dying if I'm not creating. I don't feel like myself. And whether that's like a meal at home, or like, because, you know, I love to entertain, I love to cook. Like, whatever that is, if we don't have that outlet, then it just feels like I'm not serving people. And like, for me as a dance teacher, even, I really have a hard time saying no, because it feels like being a doctor. And I know that that's so stupid, but like, at the same time, it feels like I don't have the option to say no. If somebody's putting themselves out there to ask me for something, I have to say yes. Mm-hmm. And that also makes problems with boundaries down the line, but also it just feels good, and it makes me feel whole to do all the things, right? But the creative process has always changed for me. Like, at that point in time, there was this really great group of women of all ages and all stages of their career. And I felt like they needed to be heard. So how can I, like, make a vehicle of something for them to be heard? But I work differently than a lot of people. Like, a lot of people have an idea, and then they write down a very meticulous story, and they start, like, from the story base. For me, I see things as a big picture. Like, in my head, my mind works like a movie, and I see where the outcome is. And then I go back and put the puzzle pieces in place how to get to the outcome, if that makes sense in some sort of way.
You're very visual.
Very,
so you actually see it. Yeah.
Very, very visual. And in that, I'm very lucky that I get to experience a lot in the world. Like, I travel a lot. Like, in the last 5 months, I've been in getting to share what I do and share what we're doing in Nashville with China and Japan and Argentina and Mexico and Italy. Like, it's just been wild, like, what I get to do. And so those two things is that I'm a big picture person and I'm extremely curious about people, things, customs. I'm just curious about how anything happens, right? Like, from making a fabric to, like, I don't know, like, it just really, it interests me. And also, like, the way that I feel about dance, people feel about flowers, or people feel about podcasts, or people feel, like, it's really, like, fascinating to me that, like, other people have that deep ocean of love, like, inside. So with Dia de los Muertos, I had done a kids ballet, kids here in Jupiter, and we did it at the Kravis Center, and it was kids dancing for kids, right? And when I researched that ballet, something hit me, and it's deeper. Like, there's something deeper to be told. And in truth be told, I was losing my dad, and Kim, you know my dad, and he died in the most beautiful way. Like, that I can say, oh, I'm gonna well up, you know, it's so many years later. But he showed us how to die, and how to die with grace, and, like, grace and beauty. But in the States, that we celebrate this culture in a way that it feels so permanent and it feels so loss endeared. And during that time, I had traveled to Mexico, and the festival with Youth America Grand Prix was the exact weekend of Dia de los Muertos. And they are the opposite. Like, it is not permanent. I went to the cemetery and I was like, oh, can I take photos? And they were like, of course. Like, why wouldn't you? Like, and they're sitting on people's graves, eating tacos and playing their, like, favorite music, and, like, through the night. Like, it's like a party, like, selling churros at the cemetery. Like, I can't even imagine that happening in Tequesta, where my dad is buried. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there's no way that that's going to happen here, right? And so I had a photo of my dad, and in every town and every ofrenda that I saw, I asked if I could put him on the ofrenda.
And the ofrenda, and I just know that from the movie Coco, which I love.
I know Coco is the most amazing thing, and we love that. And in people of Mexican descent, they definitely love the movie because it, like, gets things out there. But it is deeper, you know, the holiday. So the actual painting. So when I went to Nashville, I knew that there was a Hispanic community, but didn't necessarily, hadn't been seen in a way that, you know, Kim, we're so lucky because where we grew up in South Florida, I mean, we went to school and experienced friends of, like, all backgrounds.
Yes.
And we don't realize that it's not like that in other parts of the country.
Absolutely.
Like, I know that we had friends that, you know, were Jamaican or Haitian or, you know, and religions. Like, my own group of friends, like, had all the religions, you know, as well. And we experienced, like, all of those holidays of what those are. So for me in Mexico, for them sharing that with me and going through it, and me knowing that, okay, this ballet is deeper. And then the painting is called Sunday Afternoon in Alameda Park, which is a place in Mexico City. And you can stand in front of the mural, and it's massive, done by Diego Rivera. And it's absolutely beautiful. And La Catrina La Calavera is the thing that you see. Everybody's human in it. And there's Frida and there's Diego and there's the history of Mexico in it. But the main point of it is, no matter what class you're born into or what skin tone you have or what you look like, underneath, all of our bones are exactly the same. And we all experience death and we all experience life. And it's how you want to experience those things along the way. So for me, I went there and I experienced that. And when I came to Nashville with my boss, Nick Mulliken, I knew I wanted to do this. And I dragged him to Mexico next year for the festival. And for 2 days, we went to Mexico City and we experienced the artists, the culture, you know, all of this. And then I gathered all the information and then I do vision boards.
Okay. So you do the vision board.
It's a vision board, or I guess in business they call it a deck, which I had to learn, you know, from different projects that I did. And I actually experienced this from my best friend, Venus Williams. That's how she does her projects for like design or whatever she's doing. She does a vision board and I've watched her click and like put it together. And it takes all these ideas and it organizes your mind without writing, keeps it visual, right? And so I really watched her do this and that inspired me. And that's how I do every project. And I'm not always good with my words. So that way I can send a director or somebody that I'm working with the vision board. And then suddenly they understand what's in my head and I don't have to explain it in words. Cause I feel like sometimes words muddies it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? But all visual. And she probably does a lot of that with design, her design business, right?
Tons of that with her design business. Like I actually worked a project with Sonia Haffey, who's head of the design business, and I sent this deck in. Like, you know, I'm pretty fearless. Like, I presented to this major fabric company, and afterwards they asked me for my deck. And I had to call Sonia and say, what's a deck? I don't know what a deck is. And Sonia was like, it's that amazing presentation that you did. And I was like, oh, okay, so I could send that. So I do a vision board, and I think that that helps me communicate in the best way possible. And then I'm really lucky that I just say, like, trust me. I don't have a detailed story, because I think that when you do that, you put yourself in a box to other artists and what they want to bring to the table. So then I walk into the studio and I have a huge playlist of music that could work. And I see what dancers are standing in front of me. And then we start working with the music. And then I say, okay, this could be this part of the story. And this could be this part of the story. So I think of it like Lego pieces. I hate Legos. I could never be.
I don't like them either.
I can't do it for the life of me with the Legos. But I build it like as I go, like Lego pieces. And then I have big benchmarks of ideas that I know that I want to see visually. And then we shade in from there. And I'm very lucky that that works for me, right? And because I'm super visually stimulated, like that's whatever project I am, that's how I kind of started. Does that make sense?
Totally. And I've had the pleasure of seeing you do this. I mean, when you were creating, was it Golden Age of Hollywood?
Yes.
And we watched all those movies. I can remember being in your bed and watching like these old movies, and you were just—
Easter Parade, Kim. Yes. We sat in my bed eating snacks, like watching Easter Parade.
Yeah. Yeah. And seeing your mind work, and you'd be like doing something over here and you'd be like, oh, we could do that over there. Like the TV was on in the background, but you were just still pulling in this creative inspiration. I've seen it.
And you know what's crazy? People are always shocked is I don't listen to music. I don't listen to music in the car. I don't listen to music in the house.
You don't?
No.
Interesting.
Because when I hear music, my mind and my heart start working. And so then I'm always working, and I'm very lucky and very cursed that because I am one of those people that gets to do what I love every single day, it never feels like a job, but then it's always a job.
Yes, because you don't turn off.
It doesn't shut off.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. It just keeps going.
It doesn't shut off. So I watch movies. I do watch movies a lot because that's how my mind works. Or I love a bad TV show.
Like, name one.
Well, it used to be for a long time 90 Day Fiancé.
Okay.
Because it just made me feel better about my life. Like, I'm doing okay. like, I'm doing okay. Like, in comparison to this. I do love, right now I'm watching The Rookie.
Like, I haven't
all
seen
the
this.
Seasons of The Rookie. And it's just on in the background because I don't really have to pay attention to it. So I just keep it on in the background and—
Kind of mindless.
Yes.
Mindless entertainment.
Like, kind of. That. But like, if I listen to a podcast, I have to focus because these people are really sharing with me, and like, I have to really focus on like what that is and what we're doing. So if I'm at home cooking or whatever, I always just have the TV on in the background.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's not music.
You are an excellent cook. And that's one thing when you say like you open your heart, like you open your home and your heart and you want to cook for people. And I remember you coming to my house and my then boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, right, was traveling a lot. And you were like, I'm going to bring food over and I'm going to cook for you. And I'm going to spend the night because I know that you're scared to be here by yourself.
The big house, right? Yes.
I know. And you, that's what you did for me, which is so Maria Conrad, so special.
No, but that's my thing. I love to cook. Like, yeah. It's, and you know, my
Italian cooking. Or anything,
everything,
really.
Yeah. Everything. But my mom is 100% Italian, and she does not cook.
She does not.
She does not
know
like
that.
It.
Shout out to Donna.
Shout out to Donna Conrad. Like, she can cook. She just chooses not to. Like, yeah. It's not her thing. Like, she finds it, like, you know, whereas I find it so creative, and I love to do that. But I think that's part of the creative process.
Totally. Like,
as well. And then the other thing that I really love, I try to put myself in other professions that are like dance. So for me, sports are like dance.
Okay.
So like every time somebody goes out onto the tennis court, they're in a costume, they're performing for people, they're in a competition against themselves, right? Same thing, like I was telling you, Kim, that since I've moved to Nashville, I'm obsessed with hockey. I'm a Predators fan,
yes.
Like full out. And there are nights that I go to a hockey game by myself because I
love it.
I have no one to go with. I listen to the hockey podcast. Like, I know exactly what's going on.
Okay.
Like, I really know. I would like to say that my first hockey game was like in a March as they were wrapping up the season 2 years ago. And they had a new player named Luke Evangelista. And I was like, this boy's the youngest boy on the team, but he's the most talented. And everyone's like, you know nothing about hockey. And I was like, but I spot talent for a living. And I'm telling you, this boy is the future of the team. And now he's got a nickname and he's got the Vange, which, Luke, I don't like that name, like, at all.
I need to look this guy up now.
Oh, he's so handsome, too.
Oh, is he cute?
Like, he's, like, 22, and I'm like, this is perfect. He should date a dancer because they're super focused and he's super focused and, like, you know.
Oh, I love this. That,
right?
I love this, like, for Luke.
So
yeah.
I love this for Luke, too, but he hasn't, like, come around to this. So, but no, and he's super sweet. I got to meet him at a couple of events. And they're really sweet. But I do that. Like, I go to hockey by myself.
Yeah. I like what you said, that you spot talent. And you do. But it may not be the talent that everyone thinks. Like, I think that you spot talent in people, like, almost you can see their soul and them as a human. Like, they may not be the most technically advanced dancer, but you've seen something in them. And that's what I always loved about you, watching you in action in the company or at the dance studio or whatever you were doing. You would just see something in somebody and pull that out of them. And I think that's really special. That's a very special trait to have.
I think that it's very important to not look at the external things in people because those things fade. And I have found that the most physically talented dancers are not the ones that go on to do it. Mm. And I do think that one of my gifts is X-ray vision. Mm-hmm. Because I don't fit into the mold of what is necessarily wanted in ballet, I really have developed a gift of really just kind of quietly watching, because I had to watch and I had to figure out how to fit into that world because I'm not physically able to do the work the way that other people are able to do the work. Just like my legs are short and my feet aren't good and, you know, I have an Italian booty and that doesn't, ballet is for everybody. But being a professional ballet dancer, to be able to execute the work, much like being a swimmer, mm-hmm. right? Like Michael Phelps is an amazing swimmer because he's double jointed in his shoulders and his hips, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe not his hips, but just his shoulders. So there are things, just like, I can't complain that I'm not going to be considered to be a basketball player because I'm 5'2", mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But there is a spot for all of us, mm-hmm. right? Like if you look at basketball coaches, nobody in basketball is 6'1" 6'2", 6'3", and a basketball coach, right? Mm-hmm. But they have that ability to spot, to do, to know the game, to see all those Lego pieces that I talked about before in what we do. And I really, when I recruit, I take a lot of time, more than most people. I have a Zoom meeting with them. And then something that I love about my boss at Nashville is he wants them to come in up and take a class with him. So he's not taking anybody off of video. And because his point is, and what he taught me through this, is if they don't like his class and he's not a fan of the class, there's no point of like starting your career there, because it's going to be miserable for both of you, right?
It's got to be a good fit.
It's got to be a good fit. So I have a deep curiosity about people and things. And so when I talk to dancers, I ask them, what do they like to do outside the studio? It tells me like who they are, right? Or if we're talking about creativity, if I go to create a solo on someone, I have a list of questions. And a lot of times dancers aren't comfortable talking, right? Like they express themselves through their body, so they're not comfortable talking. So I ask them like, what's your favorite ballet? Who's your favorite dancer? What's your dream role that you would probably never be considered for? Like what I ask them, what's a secret about yourself? You know, like I always share this one, like I'm scared of cotton balls. I'm petrified of cotton balls.
Wait a second.
I'm petrified.
Wait, do you have, because the round, I've heard of something where it's like a bunch of round shapes together.
No.
Or it's not that. Okay.
It's that. It's the texture and that, like that noise that a cotton ball makes. And I think I had a bad dental experience where they like shredded it out of my teeth, like after it was impacted. But then, of course, there's always family member that brings you trauma. Shout out to Antoinette. She found out about this and thought this was silly. And so she would leave cotton balls on my pillows.
Oh my gosh.
And so I would like lay down on it. So I hate, like literally, Kim, so bad that my doctor, Dr. Sirwitz, had to put it on the shot chart. Like, please do not use cotton balls, because the nurses would not listen. They would not listen. They'd be like, okay, Maria, whatever. So, yeah. So anyway, so I normally share that, because if I share a fear, then they're more comfortable sharing themselves with me.
They'll be like, oh, she's scared of cotton balls. I could tell her anything
right? And so, and that's how I start. I start with the questionnaire. And because the information from somebody else, and I think this is with anything in life, the information with somebody else, from somebody else, helps you know how to deal with them and how to help them be successful. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
A little bit. So when I recruit dancers, I'm very proud that I don't always recruit what other people see as the beauties or the gems, but then they're the fighters, right? And then they discover the things about themselves, and I can help them in that process, with that process of discovery. And as I tell my young people, what the biggest thing is, my job is to teach them how to communicate, because we communicate with our bodies, but we talk about all the time, myself included, and nobody gets it right, the change that the dance world needs. We talk about it all the time.
Let's talk about the change that dance needs to see, because there needs to be some changes.
There definitely needs to be some changes.
Are we progressing a little bit?
Oh, we are progressing beyond.
Okay. Okay.
Like, I really believe that we're progressing.
You're in it. Yeah.
I'm in it.
And what are we saying needs to change? Maybe we should back, because maybe people listening are not, some will be very into dance and some are just learning about all of this. So.
What it is.
Yeah.
I think that because it's such a classical art form, and it was started in a day in which there were confines, and it was done for the upper class. There's no way around it, right? It was done for the upper class. Some of that elitism traveled with it. But I don't know that it is elite like that. I think it's the perception of the outside world, right? But naturally, that seeps into the studio, right? And there is a product that has to be done. Like, if we're going to uphold classical ballet, we cannot... I try to explain, like, Petipas is the person that created all these ballets that you know, right? Like Sleeping Beauty, Swan, like, you know, like these are Petipas ballets, right? And I do think that some people want to just go in and slash it across the board. But would we do that to an artist such as Renoir? Would we walk into a gallery and throw paint? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Some people would. But we have to accept that during his time period, our history is not so great. Mm-hmm. Right? And so how do we take that and how do we reimagine what that is and what we can do? So, for instance, La Bayadere is a ballet that definitely a lot of people want to cancel and not touch. But it's a beautiful ballet. Mm. And I think in some ways, and this might be against popular belief, but I do think in some ways, like, Petipaul was a feminist because he was the first person to take female stories of heartache and put them on the stage and let female dancers dance them. Because if you remember during Shakespeare, it was men still acting out female roles. Women still were not allowed on the stage and able to do that. So in ballet, it's the first time, right, that this beauty, that women were lifted up in this way that was so beautiful and so elegant and so revered. And we heard their stories of heartache, like Giselle or, you know, what these were. So La Bayadere has this scene, and it, often in ballets, it's called the white act. In Swan Lake, it's the swans are the white act, right? In Giselle, mm-hmm. there are the willies that are the white act, right? And so it's always like a section right in between. And La Bayadere has this that he's in an opium dream and he dreams of these women and like they come out. And a lot of people have a hard time with that, very hard time with that. So I re-envisioned this ballet and I went to my women in my second company because they were like, we want to do it. And I was like, like, how do we do it? How do we do what this is? So the whole ballet is done in lines in unison and they repeat the choreography over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. So instead of putting them in the tutu and the tights, I put them in slip dresses that were all different colors in the same palette. I took their hair out of the bun and I put their hair down. And so you could see all these females with all different, and they're celebrating who the female is in that moment and them dancing in unison, right? But beyond—
So different, but being in unison together.
Together, yeah. Right? Which I think is really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. And then we also, they were bare leg. We took the pointe shoes off, but we did all the ballet steps in that way. And I think, and then I sent the history. I sent them all the history of the ballet, what people like about it, mm-hmm. what people don't like about it, what needs to be changed, what doesn't, so that they could make the decision themselves. And then I said to them, ladies, if anybody has a problem with doing this, please contact me and it'll be anonymous and we won't do the ballet. Mm-hmm. We won't do it. Mm-hmm. Not one woman contacted me. They read the full history and they said that there was an empowerment for them taking the ballet back in the story, but keeping the history of what it was. So when we talk about change in ballet, that's one way that we do it, right?
I love that. I love that because, you know, to think about, I'm like so big on intention. So what is the intention of the story? But also educating them so they can say, you know what, I want to act this out or I don't want to act this out, right? Like, but usually people are not given a choice. So that's
usually
why you're so unique.
They're not given a choice. And sometimes stories are just stories that we have to tell. We have to remember that we're vessels of creativity and beauty, and not all stories are beautiful stories, right? But somebody in that audience might identify with that story. And so we want to make sure that they're heard, just like people on your podcast are going to identify with some people and not identify with some people. But there's going to be somebody out there that your words, Kim, change them, right? Or hearing what the platform of what you've had. And so that's what I think of when I'm trying to create something new. And what was really interesting about it, I had women across the country that are in dance. I had posted it on Instagram, like a story, and they were like, this was incredible. Like somehow I was welling up. Like women that had actually danced this are super famous in dance, right? They contacted me and they were like, we never thought of doing it like this. And there's something that welled up inside of me to be able to see this.
You celebrate, I think you celebrate women overall. And what you said, and I, that from day one, when I met you, I got that from you, but what you said from the dance class of the older women.
Oh my gosh.
I'll call us older. We were adults. Like, it's just not as common to find that. And then you celebrated women of all ages in Reach Dance Company, mm-hmm. women that had professional careers on Broadway that were like,
Noreen.
Yes, Noreen. She was what, in her 50s?
And coming back to dance.
Coming back to dance, but celebrating them and giving them a role, giving us a role. I was in my 30s, you know, 35 roughly, and giving us a role in making us, we were relevant and current and exciting. And it was the most fun. I think I didn't really appreciate it in the moment. I think I did, but there was still so much more appreciation. And now that it's behind me,
right.
I'm like, oh man, I would give anything to go back and have one of those weekends in the studio, right?
Oh my
with
gosh.
Our group.
With the ladies.
With the ladies. Like, yeah. So much fun and so special.
Well, one of my favorite ballets that we did was The Office.
Yeah.
And it was about women entering the workplace. And the reason I did that is it allowed so many types and so many different types of dance to celebrate who you guys were. Mm-hmm. Like, you mm-hmm. have to work with the tools in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But you're able to highlight everyone, and not everyone has the best extension and the best feet and the best body and the best this and the best that. And you were able to highlight the best in each of us.
Right.
And make us look amazing.
Oh,
yeah. I think you did. You always did.
I think. And you guys gave that back to me, and that I knew that there was something that I had to create and had to come out of me. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that's really important to remember, is that we're all creative beings and we're all very different. I think so many times we try to fit ourselves into the mold, mm-hmm. right? And that's what I say to my dancers all the time, is you don't have to be, we already have a Tyler Peck and we already have a Misty Copeland. Mm-hmm. Your job is to be the next, oh, I have beautiful names in that company, the next Zohar, or the next Gabby, or the next Nicole. Like, that's their job, mm-hmm. is to be the next version of what somebody needs next. Mm-hmm. And the only way that they can do that is if they're authentically themselves. And think about yourself at 19 and 20. It's really hard to figure out who you are authentically.
Yeah. Oh, like, my God. I mean, I'm just figuring it out now at 45.
Right?
And like, maybe not even there. Who knows?
It's really hard. But that's the idea, that we are authentically ourselves in each moment. And then we reinvent.
Yeah.
In every moment. And how many times have you reinvented in your life?
A lot.
And I've reinvented in my life so many times. Like, I remember we were talking about this. I was going through the divorce and my dad was passing. And I knew that there was more that I wanted to give inside. Right. And I know that some people like look at that as ego, and I don't. Like, I just, there's more that I want to do. There's more that I want to share. And like, I have such curiosity and like, what's next, you mm-hmm. know? And maybe this will be amazing, and maybe this, and like, so I have a little bit of FOMO, mm-hmm. like at all points in time, which also creates a little stress, right? Like, of that as well. But I do remember, and I mentioned this to you, like, I had a friend, a very good friend, Isha, who sat me down and was like, write a contract with yourself and like go through, and especially for me, because I don't write. Mm-hmm. I'm not a
visual,
writer.
You're visual.
Which is so crazy. I wrote it out, I signed it, and I put it away. And I realized a year later, everything that was on that contract I did. Right?
Subconsciously, probably.
Subconsciously.
You,
and you told me that
it.
Story, yeah. too, that somebody had you write a letter, and then a year later, you were like, oh my gosh, everything in this letter has been healed, or like...
Yeah. Once you write it down, I do think there's something to be said. Once you write it down, subconsciously it does something, and it's right. and it's programmed in there, and you could forget 2 minutes later what you wrote down on that paper, but you have programmed that in, that you start carrying out those things, you start manifesting those things, right?
Yes. And what I always say too, it's always the underdogs. Like, there's no part of me that should have been able to have the career that I had, but I made the space and I took the leap. Mm-hmm. Like, I had no idea. I remember I was going on sabbatical, like, for the spring, and I hadn't booked anything. And my good friend, Philip Neal, who's very high up in the industry and very, has had a career that we all dream of, right? And here I am and he's taking me under his wing and I have not yet close to the experiences. He was a principal in New York City Ballet for 20 years and a director, and now he's at Boston Ballet. Like, he's just like extraordinary, right? And so classy, like always with an Hermes belt and you know, and here I am like in a sweatpant and like an Adidas shoe, like always with one leg up on the sweatpant. Yes. But that's my point, is the way that I see things in other people, he saw something in me.
Yeah.
And if we're just authentically ourselves, then we do it. And sometimes we have to pretend to be authentically ourselves. And then after that point, we realize, even in pretending, we were authentically ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I would say you definitely feel authentic at all times. Like, you really commit. You commit to your vision and your creativity, and you commit to that, and you see it through. You really do.
Thank you for that.
Yeah,
but
learn that from you.
Even with that, you have to be patient, because not all times. So, like, if I hear a song, I love a Shazam. This was the best invention 10 years ago. Shazam. Like, I will Shazam a song at the Yard House, like, ASAP.
At the Yard House. Right? It's actually really good music always at the
really
Yard
good.
House.
Really good. So I will Shazam a song at the Yard House, and it will go into a playlist, and I separate them out in those playlists for a long time. Or a lot of times I meet musicians, or here's one, because we're talking about creativity. Mm-hmm. I was in Kansas City Ballet, setting a ballet in Kansas City. And my last day there, I was exhausted, because when you create a ballet, it's like all of you. You have no option. You don't sleep, even if you want to sleep. Like, it just comes to you, the worry of what that is. And then I try to keep that worry to myself, because a lot of choreographers take that out on the dancers in the room. Mm. And their insecurity, I try not to make the dancers feel my insecurity. Does that mm-hmm. make sense? Mm-hmm. Because that's not fair to them.
That's not their worry. It's yours.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they need to be the most open vessel that they can, so that I can make them feel confident. Because my work doesn't look good unless they look good, mm-hmm. right? So it's very stressful. And I also, the other thing that I learned with this is, I love people and I love to be around people, but when I choreograph, it really is a private activity. Mm. Like, I want to have my boyfriend on the road with me, like, and do it, but I realize that I can't.
You can't do what you're good at.
With that. And so for me, it's kind of like a movie meditation. Like, I walk into the studio and the whole world melts away. The phone calls melt away. The worries melt away. The I haven't paid my taxes melts away. Like, you know, like whatever yeah. that is, it all melts, maybe too much,
yeah.
right? Like, it all melts away and I'm just fully present. It's the only time in my life I'm fully present, mm-hmm. I have to say. I try to sit and meditate and all the things pop into my head, and I can maybe get through 15 minutes of meditation at a time if I'm practicing.
But that's your meditation. The choreographic process
is absolutely my meditation.
Is your meditation.
Is the way that I give back to myself and to the world and to be present, mm-hmm. right? So my last day in Kansas City, there was an exhibit of Giacometti.
I don't know what that
is. Oh, Kim. Well, I'm going to get you the book. It's a very short read. And I read this book about Giacometti my first year of college at University of the Arts in Philadelphia in a modernism class. And Giacometti was a sculptor, but his sculpture, we as artists always have a nervous, I think as humans, I can't just say as artists, because I think all humans are artists, right? Mm-hmm. Like engineers.
Have something, yeah.
Engineers are artists with math,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, mm-hmm. doesn't matter what you are, everybody's an artist, everybody's creative. And so he would create a sculpture, but his idea was it never was finished, mm-hmm. ever. And so, like, Kim, you would purchase this sculpture for thousands of dollars. Giacometti would come over to your house for dinner and he would look at the sculpture and he'd be like, Kim, I'm taking that back. It's not done. And he would like.
And you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah. You're like, wait a minute.
Hold up, Giacometti.
Yeah. Pull out, Albert Giacometti. And he would redo the sculpture and then he would put it back in. And he would go crazy by this, but there was also a freedom in it, because nothing's ever finished. Mm. So he could produce tons of work out of his soul and it was never done. And I think as humans, we're all unfinished sculptures, right? Like, we're changing like at every point. So I got to see this exhibit in America and I walked around and I walked around and I took all these photos and I put them on a vision board and I put them away. And then I was chosen as a fellow at Butler University. And I walked in and I looked at the group of dancers in the room. I never know what I'm going to create because I find if I create choreography before I go into the room, it's never right. Like it's trying to put them into a cage and it doesn't look good. And I looked at them and I was like, these are my unfinished sculptures. And I created this piece, Giacomini, and I'm very proud of it. Like it was one of the few pieces that evolved into what I saw in my head. Mm. And they were so supportive with the lighting and the costumes. And the other thing that I really need is an editor.
Mm. And I feel like I could do this for you.
Yes, I need an editor and I need, and I'm very open about it. Like in ballet world, you always have a rehearsal director in the room from the organization. So like, I don't work with the dancers of Kansas City all the time. So there's a rehearsal director in the room to help keep a safe space for both the dancers and you, right? Like, so it's like a third voice.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's interesting. Has it always been that way?
Always has. And then they are the keepers of the work once you leave. Okay. So I always look at my rehearsal director. Some people don't like the rehearsal director to talk at all. Like, I like that interaction of that. And I always turn to them and I'm like, these are our two options. Which one do you like better? And always I go with it because they know the dancers better than I do.
Right. That makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Like at all points of time in how to deal with that and like know what that is. So I put that piece away and then we pulled it out again at Nashville. But each time I pull out a piece, I change it because it's like fitting different people. Like, again, like I really like to see what humans are in the room and I don't want them to be anyone else but who they are. Mm-hmm. Good, bad, or ugly.
Yeah.
I just want them to show me who they are. And then so the piece always evolves. Right. And then now I'm lucky at this point in my life. I've reached the point, the career where I'm working with composers directly, which is wild.
Wow.
And one of our favorite is actually, she lives between New York and here. She used to be on Palm Beach and now she's, and can I just tell you the story about her? She's wild.
Yeah, of course.
Her name is Karen Lafrac. And Karen always loved music and played piano, but talk about reinvention. She didn't start composing until in her 50s.
Wow. I love that. See, I love a later life story of like, I'm going to do something I've never done before.
And I'm just,
love that.
I'm just going to go for it. And I met this woman. She's so classy and she's so elegant, but she's so cute. And we just hit it off. Like, we're like the most unlikely pair, right? And she, I used her music and this was a big deal. At Lincoln Center in New York City.
Wow.
Like this was the epitome. Like this is probably the most powerful thing. And I worked with this dancer, Audrey Sissoko, out of Lines. And Kim, she is the Sylvie Guillaume, or in our other worlds, the LeBron James of contemporary ballet.
Wow.
And Audrey is 6 feet tall. She's half Senegalese and half German. And so she is a creature. And when you walk into the studio, the only way to work with Aji is to collaboratively work and say, how does this feel? How does this look? Because she's so authentic.
Wow.
She's so truthful with who she is as an artist. So Karen, I found this piece of music that I heard of hers that was called Space. And we listened to music over and over and over together. And we did it together in that process. And I was sitting in her apartment in Miami and, you know, having lunch. And I looked at her and I said, Karen, how are you not fearful? Like, you're so courageous. Just like, you're in your 60s and you're like creating this music. And like, she gets up, Kim, and she creates music every day.
Wow.
She gets up and plays the piano every day, whether it's for a half an hour or whatever. I wish I could do that.
I think musicians have to, from the musicians that I know, they have to do it every day. It's like the muscle memory, it's just there's so much to it that every musician I know, they practice every single day.
Every day.
My son's violin teacher was like, I am now in the phase, I'm retired, but I am practicing 2-3 hours a day. That's a lot.
That's
a lot.
So again, maybe that's their present meditation.
Right, right.
Like the discipline that you have to have discipline to have freedom. We hear that like a lot, right? So Karen, I was sitting there and she said, my dear, I am too old to be fearful. And those words stuck with me forever.
I'm too old to be fearful. That's absolutely right.
And I was like, but you know what? At 19, we're too old to be fearful.
Yeah.
Right? And at 28, we're too old to be fearful. And at 35, we're too old to be fearful. And I hear like I hear Karen's voice and saying that to me all points in time.
I love that.
You know, like I was in Milan and I had to put 160 dancers on stage in the same piece in a stage that didn't fit 160 dancers. And I had a total of 7 hours to do it, to choreograph and to do it. And I was like having a panic attack. And then I was like, you're too old to be fearful.
That's right.
Like, and it's like Giacometti, yourself. Like just get it out of your body. And if the next time it doesn't work, you don't do it the same way.
Yeah.
Because there's always a lesson in making it work.
And you can still evolve.
Yes.
You can still evolve and you can change it. And you, what you are today, you don't have to be tomorrow. That's what I always think. I'm like, you know what? Today,
Kim, you should say that again. What you are today, you don't have to be tomorrow.
What you are today, you don't have to be tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that.
It's so, look at you, profound.
Profound.
That's the name of your book.
No, okay. Can you talk about what you do with YAGP, which is the Youth America Grand Prix, which is what, there's a Netflix documentary called First Position, right?
Yes.
And before, I think this was before you were involved, I watched this documentary and I was like, I was just mind blown. I mean, because I was a dancer and had a little bit of background knowledge about it, but it's pretty intense.
It's so intense.
You guys should watch it if you've not seen First Position, but talk about what you do with YAGP.
So during that period in which I had that time off that mm-hmm. I talked about that I made space, I had had students compete at YAGP. I had done a couple of different things. And in every, so YAGP is the largest scholarship competition in the world. Okay. And what it gives is students a space to perform these classical variations. So in a way, it's keeping classical variations alive. Mm-hmm. In other ways, people, their criticism of YAGP is that it's not, it's turning into a competition versus preserving the art form, right? Mm-hmm. But it is preserving the art form, mm-hmm. right? And it's making, it's giving kids a chance to learn about the art form and what they're doing and where they're going. So for instance, if there's somebody that's super talented at 15, they might get chosen from the smallest town in Mexico to a
full— It's international.
International. Yeah. To Stuttgart Ballet is probably one of the best ballet companies and best ballet schools in the world, and it's in Stuttgart, Germany. You could get chosen for a full ride. Mm. A full ride. They cover your meals, they cover your housing, they cover everything, and you get to live your dream, right? Like, you and I both come from households where dance was a push for our families. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. those classes were a push. I cleaned the studio so that I would be able to dance, mm-hmm. right? And I was, talk about spotting talent. I showed up to this audition for this kids performing group in Jupiter with Denise Presto. And you know that name. Yeah. Like, right. And I knew nothing. I stood at the bar. I tell this story all the time. Kim in a fish t-shirt that said Fort Myers Beach on it and little briefs and a boombox with, well, I mean, we knew I was always going to be a choreographer because I had no dance training, but I had prepared a dance number to Debbie Gibson on
Electric Youth.
Yeah, no, that was okay. The second album, right? The first album. Yeah. So Into the Blue, I think. And I prepared, and I walked in and everybody was in black leotard, pink tights at the bar. And I just put the boombox down and I stood there, and all the other girls that were like me ran out crying, like after tondus, like the second exercise at the bar, tondus, and ran out crying. And I was old enough to be embarrassed. I was like in sixth grade, mm-hmm. fifth or sixth grade. And I stayed.
Yeah.
And she took me because I was fearless. Like in that moment, I was fearless. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, I was wildly embarrassed, right? But in the moment, which we talk about, like I was fearless and she took me, and my parents didn't have the money, and I got a scholarship and I got to take classes, you know, she made me assist so that I could get caught up. Right. And so that was the first moment of somebody looking past the body, mm-hmm. the ability into the passion. And perhaps maybe that's why I do that mm-hmm. now. So I look past. So I have the opportunity to do that with YAGP. As well with the founder, Larissa Savelyev, and I will tell you about her. She's wild. She danced in the Bolshoi. She grew up in the school, all of it, and then didn't dance professionally. Mm. And her husband, Gennady, danced with ABT in New York City. And Larissa was like, I know nothing about this. I'm going to start this competition.
She started it. Wow. And it's the biggest competition in the world.
Yeah. In the world. And she started the competition. Harrod Conservatory in Boca was one of the first people to like give them scholarships. Like if they won at finals, mm-hmm. I think maybe they had like 10 locations. Now in the United States, we do like 50. There's three competitions happening a weekend and they go in and all of the companies from around the world all are the judges and you get to see these kids and you get to see this talent and you help guide and you watch them grow. And if they don't go on to do dance, you still go on to watch them grow and love dance, right? Mm-hmm. And become lawyers and be on boards of nonprofits. Like, it's just a really beautiful thing. And I'm at the age and have been involved that I get to see that.
You see that growth in that person, which is incredible.
All the time. And then you go to places like Mexico and you go to Cordoba and you watch this change kids' lives, mm-hmm. right? Like you watch this change the kids' lives and have careers at ABT, American Ballet Theater in New York City, right? Or Japan. Japan is just, it's so beautiful and there's such a giving culture. Or I've gotten to go to China and share the way that I experience dance, right? And I do think it's a little different. And so I love sharing that with them. So YAGP has allowed me to go around the world, mm-hmm. has made this very unique group of professionals, because a lot of time in this business, because it's so different in what we do, we don't have a unit. And this group of professionals has become like a family. So I know that my friend Luca Masala, who runs the Princess Grace Academy in Monaco.
Oh, I love Monaco.
I know.
You can
go visit. I know that if I called him up and said, Luca, I needed you, he would be like, what can I do, my dear? Do you know what I mean? So you create this family. And the kids create the family. Mm. So I watch kids from America meet kids from Belarus, and they're like best friends and learning from each other's cultures. So it's really beyond the competition. The competition doesn't really matter. It's the unit and the network of dance that it's created throughout the world. And then Larissa saw that not everybody's a ballerina,
mm-hmm.
right?
So what do you do with that?
Oh my gosh, there's so many companies. She's like, Mariuszka, that's what she calls me. Mariuszka, Marusa, like what can we do to help these kids? Mm-hmm. And what can we do? And now there's contemporary intensives. Mm-hmm. And she has a group called ICE, the International Contemporary Ensemble. And she brings in the best contemporary choreographers and those kids get to experience that as well.
So there's something beyond being
just
a prima
ballet.
Ballerina.
There's something beyond that at all points in time. And a lot of times the ex-ballerinas end up working for the organization.
Mm.
And that's their foot into dance, into the next steps, into what they do. And Larissa is a yes person. She is determined and she is a yes person. And you go to her with an idea, she goes, okay. And then 2 months later, boom, the idea is like coming full force, like out of nowhere. And I have to say she has been one of the biggest compelling creative forces for me in believing in me. Mm. I went from receiving like choreography awards. I received the International Choreography Award for my entire body of work. And then from there, I was about to take a job directing a school. And she turned to me and she said, you're a choreographer, don't take this job.
Mm.
And then and I'm still good on terms with the school. I love the school and what they do and everything. And she, that day that I won that award, and I have to tell you, 7 weeks before that, I'm sorry, is this too much?
Like, no, okay. I'm loving this because you are the international choreographer of the world.
Not yet. I want to do everything. I want to work with every company in the world. I want to work with every country because they just have so much to give and I just want to experience it. But
I was with you in Paris. How many years ago was that?
Oh my gosh.
That was one of the first
15
years ago. And you had gotten a job choreographing in Paris and me and Susan went with you. And that was amazing.
We had the best time.
We had the best time.
I think we were walking out of the morning dance class and I was like, I don't know if I'm going. I have no one to go with. And you were like, Maria Conrad, I will go to Paris.
I've never been to Paris.
Huge suitcases. Everybody else had like, Kim had two, and her wedges.
And my wedges. Let me tell you, I'm a much better packer than I was 15 years ago. I've really dialed it in.
You've really simplified
it. I've reined it in because I took two carry-on suitcases to Europe, and it was a little excessive. And I don't think I wore half any the stuff I had, but I just felt like I needed to be prepared.
You had those two massive suitcases, and we stood and were like, Kimberly, what is happening right
now? I'm sorry. I need to apologize for that because that was terrible.
It was the best. It was the best. So I completely, Kim, was at the lowest point of my life. Like, I was living my dream. I was on the road, I remember, 7 weeks straight and 22 flights.
Wow.
And I remember I was doing something with Karen. This was my first big project with Karen. It wasn't that. It was right after COVID. And they were doing the international finals again. And Larissa called me and she's like, I need you to choreograph this piece on 17 dancers. Wait for it. Ages 9 to 20 from across the world. You have to choreograph it on Zoom and you have 3 in-person rehearsals to figure it out.
3 in-person. Not a lot.
And so I had this idea of what's the most beautiful chaos that I know, because it was a chaotic situation, and Jackson Pollock, because I'm visual. So I made each dancer a different color of paint. But this is before multimedia. Like, I completely cut together these paint drips in water. And so when the pink paint came in, the pink dancer came out. And when the blue, like, and I did it all myself. Like, I edited it together. And then when I met, I gave them each their own choreography. And then when we met in person, we edited it together from all of these ages, right? And I remember going to Tampa on a flight, and I was in a bad DoubleTree hotel, because a lot of people think that travel is glamorous. And a lot of times, Kim's, it's a Hampton Inn at the airport, like a lot of times by yourself. I know how to do many things with a rotisserie chicken in my room. Like, I am the queen of this. And I remember calling Christopher, my boyfriend, and just saying, like, I am so stressed and I am so tired and I had never felt like this before. I am okay if I don't wake up tomorrow morning. Like, real dark. One of the darkest points of my life. And the next day, I met with the projectionist, and my friend Philip was there in Tampa. Mm-hmm. And he shut the door after the projectionist left, and he goes, okay, go ahead. And I said, I'm fine. And he said, you are not fine. And I fell on the floor of his office sobbing.
Was it just the stress of what you had to do and COVID, and it was like—
It was everything I dreamed, but the pressure of it as well. Mm-hmm. And that feeling of that calling and giving and giving and giving, it was the first time that I learned I wasn't giving back to myself. Mm-hmm. But I really have never felt those thoughts ever until that moment. And I couldn't even talk to Chris. He was so upset. Like, I couldn't even call Chris, because if I talked to him about it, it was real. Like, he's my partner. He's my person, you know? And we had a really big talk about it. And he's like, you can do this. Like, you're almost there. Mm-hmm. You can do this. You have to channel into what it is about you. You are enough. Mm-hmm. And no matter if it's not perfect this time out, you will produce the best possible, and you deserve to be present to those artists. So what can I do to help you be present and get back to your space? And I never experienced that from like a partner, like before, like, you know, I will take on the rest of it. And he did. He took on the cooking. He took on like whatever I needed to like clear my brain. Mm-hmm. And I got there, and I remember that week. Normally at a YAGP final, you're with everybody. You're with everybody from all over the world, and it's crazy. The energy is crazy.
I bet.
And I stayed at my friend Giselle's house. I didn't stay at the hotel with the other judges, and I created that space. And it was the first time I had ever learned to create space, and that when I choreographed, I needed that space that we talked about previously. And that was the learning moment. And so I stayed at Giselle's and I ate good food and I wasn't at the restaurant. And I was dyeing costumes in the backyard, like myself.
Of course.
Of course.
Of course you were.
Myself, thinking like, did Balanchine dye his own costumes? But then I was like, probably yes at the beginning to like get the right, you know, what it was. And I protected my space, and then I won this international choreographic award.
Based on that piece that almost broke you?
Yes.
Okay.
And I was going to skip the awards ceremony, and I was up in Philip's office in my sweatpants, always in my sweatpants, Kim.
One leg up.
I still have my Reach Dance sweatpants that I wear all the time.
The
They're
best.
Like getting shot in the waist a little bit.
Those are the best sweatpants ever, by the way. Side note on that.
And I was asleep in his office. I finally slept. Because after you get something to the stage, mm-hmm. after the dress rehearsal, then you can breathe. Because no matter what, you can't change it. You can't fix it at that point. You have to like let it go. And I was sleeping in Philip's office. And they came knocking at the door. And they were like, you need to be in a dress and downstairs in 10 minutes. And I was like, what happened? Because sometimes I host the award ceremony. Like, what happened to Karin? Like, oh my gosh. Like, am I going to? I have no that thing left. I'm so stressed. Like, I can't walk out in front of thousands of people live streamed. Like, I can't do this. And I put on a dress and I went running downstairs. And then suddenly Amy Brandt, the head of Point Magazine, was there. And I was getting this award.
Wow.
And then that night afterwards at dinner, I got offers from Oklahoma City Ballet, Kansas City Ballet, Nashville Ballet to choreograph like that night.
It opened up a world for
you. A world for me.
Yeah. Which is what you always wanted to do.
Yes.
You know, you always wanted to travel around and choreograph and just be international woman of dance. And I love that. I love that. I want you to give some advice to aspiring dancers.
Mm-hmm.
To creatives,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe it's different, you know, a dancer versus a creative, because a creative, you can be creative in anything, like you were saying. But what about the girl that's taking dance classes who doesn't know where the road's going to lead? And I feel like there's this sentiment right now, because I have a 9-year-old, that you're never going to be a professional dancer. Right?
Ugh.
So that there's no value in actually going through the journey of it. And I am here to say that I was never going to be picked. I mean, that was just not, like you said, like not dance lessons were an expense, a major expense for my family. You know, just being involved in the studio, it was hard to be involved when your parents are both working, and it was not, mm-hmm. you know, a priority in that way. So I was never going to be the one that was picked, but I think that dance has added so much to my life, and I'm so grateful that I've always had it. So like, I want to know that advice for someone that is on this dance path, but you know, you don't know where it's going to lead. You don't know that you're going to end up being a professional. It's very, very difficult to do.
So I always experienced when I had the studio that moms would come to me between the 8th and 9th grade year, right? And they would say, I don't know, it's just such a commitment, and I want my kid to be a normal kid. And I would say, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Explain to me what a normal kid is. I said, you want them at football games on a Friday night, making out with boys underneath the bleachers and going to parties?
Mm-hmm. Is that normal? Yeah.
Is that normal? Is that what you mean by normal, right? And so I think that this is for both groups. First of all, I think every single person is creative.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you're a mathematician. I mean, that's what golf is for people. The creativity of hitting the golf ball, like that walking, right? That's a moving meditation for people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know it,
mm-hmm.
right? That's a moving meditation. But I say to be a well-rounded human, you have to have a spiritual, mental, and physical challenge, no matter what. There's got to be some sense of spirituality in your life. There's got to be some sort of mental, like putting those Lego pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
And there's got to be some sort of physicality, that you're moving your body and allowing your body to be physical, no matter what way that is, right? So for dancers, they have all of that in a class,
mm.
because they have to use their math brain, they have to use their analytical brain, they have to use their spiritual brain, because being on the dance floor is spiritual, giving of yourself is spiritual. You have to use the physicality, right? You're working the muscles of the body. And so it's a space where all three things come together. Same thing for tennis, same thing for hockey, same thing for whatever that is, mm-hmm. right? Same thing for writing. Like if you're sitting down writing, there's a spine, there's a musculature, there's all of those things, but it might be missing the physical portion of it, right? So to do that, we're teaching our young people that all three of those things are what we need to be a whole human, right? And so that's the biggest thing that I would say for any creative, that's what you need to survive. And you, I've listened to you talk about this time and time again on this podcast, right? But that's the way that like I identify it. As a dancer, dance is teaching you all the things that you need to know. It's teaching you discipline. It's teaching you teamwork. It's teaching you to use your voice. It's teaching you when not to use your voice and fall in line. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, as a team member, it's teaching you creativity. It's teaching you big picture. It's teaching you details. Who doesn't want to employ somebody that is like that? Because I'm telling you right now, if you go up for a job at Starbucks and you can hire a dancer or you can hire somebody that has no focus, you're going to hire a dancer because a dancer can do anything.
It's actually very true.
They can do anything.
They're going to be the most disciplined employee you have.
Ever.
For sure.
So right now in Nashville, we're doing the Nutcracker, right? And everybody's involved. It's our biggest moneymaker of the year. It's the time where we reach people in a way that would never come to dance.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you go to the Nutcracker every year with your son.
Every year with my little guy. Yep.
Yes. So I'm selling Nutcrackers right now at the front desk. This is not my creative soul. I'm like, I'm going to be the best Nutcracker seller ever.
Yeah.
I choreograph all over the world, but I am determined to have the top sales numbers.
Because you know what? Because you are yay dance.
I am yay dance. And I want you to look at that Nutcracker and come back to Nashville Ballet every year. I think at this point, I have sold more 3-packs of Nutcrackers than anybody in our organization.
I don't doubt that you have.
But no matter what you do, you have a sense of pride, you have a sense of connection, and you have a sense of truth. And I think that as humans that is, but dance, it's automatically put into who you are.
I do. I think dance is such a special thing. If you are able, everyone's able, but if you pursue it in your life, like it's added so much to my life. And getting to meet you and becoming friends with you, Maria, you're a true gift. You really are. And I'm so happy that you came here today to talk to me.
Well, Kim, I think you're the perfect person for this because you are the queen of reinvention and the queen of kindness and curiosity and growth and showing us all that we're all students of life. And so thank you for that.
Oh, thank you, Maria Conrad.
Thank you so much for Kimberly Stevens' hand.
Nobody hears that, the Kimberly Stevens hand.
No, it's okay. You'll always be Kimberly Stevens hand to me, and you'll always have those two suitcases with your wedge through Europe.
Through Europe with the wedge. I know. Who knew that everything in Europe at the time, or I did not know that everything is tighter quarters. I wouldn't have brought the two suitcases.
Because I think that was your first trip to Europe.
It was with you. Very special. Very, very special.
I love it.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. See you next time.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Cinnamon Effect. If you enjoyed our time together, don't forget to hit that follow button on your podcast app and sprinkle a little love by leaving us a 5-star rating and a quick review. Your support means the world to me. For even more goodness, check out the show notes where you'll find links to some of my favorite products. And don't forget to visit thecinnamoneffect.com to connect with me directly or to grab your TCE gratitude journal, your next step towards a more grateful life. I can't wait to spice things up with you again next time. Stay vibrant, stay inspired, and remember to add a little cinnamon to your life every day.